Session number 21010, Reel 2.
Mr. Kind, Reel 2. So you're now being drafted from the first third.
That's correct, yes. Yeah.
You just mentioned Manipur Road.
Which, as far as I can remember, was the railhead. It was a difficult rail journey because there was a change of gauge, I seem to remember, at one point on the Indian Railway. So we had to be transshipped from one train to another. Now, when we got there, it transpired that the British were withdrawing from Burma quicker than we could get down to reinforce them. So I can't quite remember the sequence of events now. So I can tell you what happened, but whether it will be absolutely in the correct sequence, I can't promise. But there was the troops coming out of Burma when we were at railhead, were down to about 30 men in a battalion, that sort of thing. The Cameron Highlanders, I think it was a battalion of the West Yorks, and they all had to be disarmed, poor chaps. You know, they brought their arms out with them, even these survivors, and their arms had to be taken. And there were also civilians, and likewise the civilian refugees, they would be described as, those of them that had arms, like Sikhs, for example. Sikh sword, he had to hand over his sword, which was fortunate in a way, because at one point there was a tremendous hubbub going on the railway line, so I went over to investigate and found that it was a krait, which is a snake, you know, and a pretty lethal one, and they were a bit worried about that. So I went and got hold of the Sikh sword and sliced the krait in half. The Sikh sword came in quite handy. Anyway, the refugees were sent off in due course, and the survivors of the British regiments, and then we went to Guwahati. I don't know if that rings a bell. Yes. Not far from the Brahmaputra, which was a river, a huge river, with these huge Mandalay-type steamers which crossed it and had to go way upstream in view of the current to get to the other side. Well, I'm always seem to be having to cross the Brahmaputra River. We were Guwahati, and now our draft was assembled. My draft from the 3rd Battalion, and the draft from the 4th Battalion, and some men from the Regimental Centre, and I think there were about 5 officers, including myself. So we were a pretty substantial force. My guess would be about 400 or something like that. But where was the 1st Battalion? So while we were in Guwahati, waiting for whatever was going to happen, we went on route marches and did what training we could and that sort of thing to keep fit and ready for whatever transpired. Well, when the 1st Battalion, what was left of it, came out, which was about 200 officers and men. You may have heard all this from Bruce Kindle, have you?
Well, his would be a different personal story in any case, so don't worry about that.
Yes, because he was with the Battalion West where we were in the draft. And where had I got to?
You were talking about the stragglers coming back from Burma.
Oh, yes, what was left of the battalion. I think by that time they were in Imphal, and they were all sent on leave. And we went down to Imphal, myself and the chap who was going to be second commander of the battalion, and one other regimental officer, and the MO, there were just four of us, left at MFAL while everybody else went on leave or doing whatever they were doing. There was nothing for us to do there, really, until it was time for the whole battalion to be reassembled, which took place in Kohima. But I remember this little party of us in Imphal, because we were in Barsha's, and just a handful of troops, because it coincided with my 21st birthday. For my 21st birthday, they decided to do something, the other three. So they produced a menu, a written menu, for our supper in our little barsha on the veranda with one of these petrol lights, oil lights. And the first course was bully beef soup. I think the main course was some sort of bully beef cottage pie or rissole, and the savoury was bully beef on toast. And this was washed down with Medical Comforts brandy, which the MO let us have. I don't know if I should be telling you this, really. This is not archival stuff.
That's all right.
This is the sort of personal stuff which I should be worried about recording, frankly. Will you cut this out?
No, this is fine. No, carry on.
And afterwards, being four of us, we played doubles tennis. By this time it was dark. But without a ball. And that was my 21st birthday party. Anyway, it must have been shortly following this, the whole battalion was to be reformed in Kohima. So we moved from our little party up to Kohima, where the rest of the battalion assembled, and this was the reforming of the 1st Battalion of the 3rd Gurkhas. And in Kohima, we seriously trained for the desert, for jungle warfare. Well, having done so, while we were there, we had to be, of course, the Japanese, having moved up to the Burma frontier, we had to be ready that although we were training, for any incursion by the Japs. So there was a screen of chin levies. Or were they Naga levies at the time? But a screen of levies. And then behind that, my company, well, at the time I was a company commander, was sent on detachment several miles on the enemy side of Kohima.
Which company did you have?
C Company. At this point, and from my hill, I could see where the battalion was several miles away, but these huge jungle clad hills and that sort of thing, it was a considerable distance to get there and back. And then from there, I decided to take a patrol down to the Kalor Valley, which was, you might describe as no man's land, really.
The Kibor Valley?
Kalor. Or is it Kibor? Wait a minute. There are two places. One we come to later on was in the Shan State. I think that was Kalor, and the valley I'm talking about was the Kibor Valley, but one can easily check that off the map. It was sort of no man's land. So I decided to investigate myself as to what might be going on down there. So it took, a 10-man patrol with a guide from the Burmese levies or something like that. And we went down through the forest, down to the... When we got down off the hills. Then we were going through teak forest, and I saw the first appearance of an extremely large turd on a path, and putting two and two together, I thought, well, perhaps that was left. And we went on down to the valley and crossed a stream there and entered a village, and we were told by the villagers that a Japanese patrol had just left. And it was interesting to have discovered that the Japanese were active there, A, and also entirely relieved that we didn't meet them, because at that distance and with no support, it would have been difficult. Anyway, we established contact, as it were, and then went back. It took quite a time to get down there. It was quite a distance, and quite a distance back again. And I think we were quite lucky not to have had any problems, shall we say, en route. And then the next thing that happened was the battalion was to be moved down from Kohima to Imphal. And we did this by marching all the way by night. And I think we marched about 30 miles or something like that every night for 3 or 4 nights, something like that, until we got down to Imphal. And then from there, I mean, if you want to hear about the fighting, this comes later on. I don't know if I'm wasting your time.
No, it's not just fighting, it's everything.
I see. I don't want to waste your time.
No, you're not wasting the time. This is excellent.
When we got down to Imphal, I think it was Bishanpur, which is just in even east of Imphal. Now, the problem at the time was communications. Because a terrific line of communication, and quite a lot of work had been done on the road up to Kohima from Guwahati or wherever, Manipur Road, and then on down to Imphal. But then we had to push on from there. So a lot of people from the tea plantations were engaged in hacking a road on from there down to Tidim, which is in the Chin Hills, and troops, including ourselves, were also involved in road making, and we had to blast our way with gelignite through rocks, and then there was a lot of digging and hacking by men, and this rather vital line of communication was developed from Imphal up through the hills into the Chin Hills and on to Tidim, to which we eventually went ourselves, and then from Tidim we went on to Fort White, the battalion, and when we got there, patrols, contact was established with the Japanese patrols were around about the place, and we were patrolling. But I remember sitting on the hill between Tidim and Fort White, Milestone 52 was what we called it as, but it was also known as Point, and a four-figure reference, which I have a note of, but I can't remember it out of the top of my head. And I remember sitting up on the hill when one was not actively engaged in daytime, in this spectacular countryside, these huge jungle-clad hills and huge valleys, and looking out literally into the plain of Burma, because we were right on the frontier there, to the sunlit plains, and you couldn't see anything happening at all. There might not have been no war, it might have been holiday, you know, lovely place to go and visit, except that from time to time you would hear the rattle of musketry somewhere out, and then perhaps the explosion of a grenade or two, so you couldn't see anything happening, even in the hills. but there was something going on. And looking out in the plain, you couldn't see a thing. But at night, if I climbed up onto the top of the hill and looked out into the plain, you could see into the blackness of the plain what looked like a tiny little necklace of light going straight off like that. And as you peered more closely to it, it was sparkling. And these were the Japanese vehicles coming up, building up for the invasion of India. You know, daytime, see nothing at all. At night, that little tinkle of light, every night, night after night, look out there. And so you would see the envisage that the Japanese build up. And then one day, I can't remember what time of day, their guns opened up and big shells started landing all over the place. And in particular, at milestone 52, which was behind us, about a mile or half a mile or something like that, a dominating feature. And while the Japanese were attacking up our ridge from the plain, they were also attacking up the parallel ridge to milestone 52, which was a dominating feature behind us. And there was obviously a big battle going on there. The Japanese eventually took that hill, and thus we were cut off. It was rather strangely, you see, our lines of communication from Tidim through to Imphal lay sort of parallel to the Japanese lines, if you see what I mean, rather than at right angles to them. So our lines of communication were likely to be punctured at any point. And that is why they put one drive in towards Tidim, generally speaking, and another drive in towards Kohima. Another one towards Imphal. I hope I haven't disturbed the communications at that point. Mm-hmm. So the battle had started. Well, orders came through, now we were cut off, that we would have to withdraw to Tidim with the Japanese behind us. And so the battalion was organized to achieve this. And how were we going to do it? Well, you know, these huge features, there was a track running from where we were forward at milestone 52 and behind Fort White, which ran alongside the hill on which the Japanese had occupied 52. And there didn't seem to be any other way out. Probably things at GHQ look all right on a map, but when you're actually on the ground, it seemed the only way we were going to. So it was decided that the whole battalion would move along this little track and around this hill with the enemy sitting above us, etc., to withdraw. And this is what we did. It seemed to me quite incredible at the time, you know, that the whole battalion, mules and the lot, we had a detachment of mountain guns, and it was deemed quite not feasible to withdraw those, so they had to be blown up, and so it was an infantry, entirely infantry job, and the gunners, I suppose, walked along with us and that sort of thing with their mules, sadly without their two guns. And quite an achievement to get guns out there to these very high features in very poor communications. And we moved along as silently as possible along this track and eventually came to the point at which we were parallel to this big hill feature, which had apparently been taken by the Japs, and we could see the battle actually going on before we left the previous day. And when we got one of these odd little incidents that one recalls, when I got absolutely parallel with this position above, a steep hill on this side, a steep cut down that side, jungle clad. The battalion office mule, which was just ahead of my company, which I was leading, slipped down the cut side. And as it slipped, these huge leather boxes on each side of it, with all the battalion bump in, flew open as the mule tumbled down, and paper started scattering out down the hillside. So what do we do? The men started going down, scampering down the hillside, rescuing Office Bump. And it was the most extraordinary situation, really, extraordinary technical situation, rescuing the Office Bump. And got hold of the mule, some men got hold of the mule, and dragged the mule back onto the track, loaded up all the Office Bump which they could lay their hands on, stuffed it in these huge leather boxes, and off we went again. It's always seemed a miracle to me that we got through this episode without being disturbed. And I think I can only put it down to the steepness of the terrain, because the Japs were definitely there, no doubt about that. And as we moved on, making this huge detour, which took us about 4 days, I think, to get round to Didim, Japanese patrols endeavoured to intercept us and that sort of thing from time to time. And I think we were a bit short of rations, because part of the journey took us through sugar cane, and I remember us picking up, quite glad to get hold of some sugar cane and that sort of thing to supplement whatever we had. And eventually we got round to Titim intact, without having suffered relatively minor attacks from Japanese patrols and that sort of thing. And then from there, they powers that be decided that we would make a raid on Milestone 52, where the Japs had captured this dominant feature. And the raid was to be done by my battalion, and mine was to be the leading company. And we advanced by night, and I remember when we assembled just before going into action, we had to muddy our faces, the British officers, which seemed really rather unnecessary, not in retrospect, I suppose it was at the time. And off we went, starting off in darkness, moving off my company, leading in dawn, and going up more or less a knife-edge ridge with a drop on either side. So we had a fairly narrow front at the base of this hill, which we had to raid. And when we got to the just about the bottom of the hill, somebody, because we advanced with one platoon in front, and then was me and company headquarters, and then the other two platoons. Somebody came back and said, "Well, come and have a look what's ahead." So I went up and had a look, and very quietly, and through the trees, you could see a whole party of Japs. So, I mean, the object being to take the hill for a start. So I felt one couldn't hang about. What do you do? Quick question. So I decided to charge. So I shouted, Gorknott Kijai, which is the Gurkha war cry, and we charge the slot. And of course, as you may know, the Japanese have a tremendous reputation for bravery, so I thought we would be doing a bit of close quarter stuff. Instead of which, they loped away. I thought, God. So this extraordinary sight, the Japanese loping off up the hill with us in hot pursuit.
Did you catch them up?
En route, we were fired at from up in the trees and that sort of thing. Apparently the Japanese had a tree sniper sort of syndrome going on at the time. And I suppose they had a little fringe of these chaps sitting out there. So there was quite a lot of firing going on from both parties going up the slope. And then the leading platoon came under heavy fire and came and went to ground.
Did the Gurkhas charge with kukris?
No. We had fixed bayonets and Tommy guns. To my recollection, we didn't get close enough to use a kukri anyway. I can't recall that we were using kukris at that point. The next thing that happened was that, as I say, the leading sections went to ground as they came under heavy fire, and then grenades started bursting around the place. So I thought I'd better go out and go to the forward, see what's to be done. And at that point, I felt a kick in my side as if I'd been kicked by a mule, knocked to the ground, and an explosion just beside me. And I found I couldn't move. And then, the company subedar, because I didn't have a company officer, came up, and I told him that I couldn't move, and he would have to take over. And then the next thing that happened was a British officer came up, because in those days we had no radio communication. And if you wanted to find out what was going on, you got a matter to go to it yourself, really. So presumably he'd been sent out from battalion headquarters to see how we were getting on or what had happened or where we'd got to, and found me there, and so what I was carrying it, taking over. And he carried me off the battlefield. And then I was back towards the RAP, where I was put on a stretcher. A stretcher jeep arrived on the scene, and I was put on a stretcher jeep, as you may or may not know, that the jeep had a stretcher on each side, and I was laid out on the stretcher on one side. And there was a Gurkha casualty on the stretch of the other side, off we went. And it was a rather uncomfortable journey, because every time the very rough track, and every time the jeep moved, one found it rather uncomfortable, to say the least.
Do you know what date you were wounded?
Well, this was October. I got a date somewhere, because
don't worry about
of course
it.
My parents got telegrams, and I've still got the telegrams actually, notifying that I'd been on the DI list, that sort of thing. And then we must have been nightfall by the time the raid started off at, as I say, at dawn, speaking approximately. When we got to Tidim, that was the advanced dressing station, it must have been nightfall by then, so it had been a pretty long day and quite a bit of distance covered in both directions, because it was dark, and in the advanced dressing station it was just lit by these oil lamps, and there were Gurkha casualties lying on the floor around me. no class distinction, as it were. One was just casualties, Gurkha and myself. And a chap called Van Sumbrun was the surgeon. He was doing a rather good job of work. Anyway, to cut a long story short, what it transpired was that my right lung had been punctured, and